Yes, I won't be.
Okay,
sweating.
We're recording.
Okay. We will call to the committee meeting to order at 6:30, whatever it says. I can't see it. Oh, I have it here. 6:31. Ah, there we go. Any citizen comments? Well, please come forward.
You have to be on the agenda?
Just come forward, state your name and address, and you have 5 minutes.
My name's Deborah Pridgett. I live at 4816 84th Street. I was at the meeting on June 19th where a resolution was proposed to decrease the levy to 2.5%. Thank you, Supervisor Skolitsky. I'm here to encourage you to follow through on that resolution. Excuse me, I'm really nervous when I talk in front of people. I'm here for the Health and Human Service Committee because it was recommended that you're going to provide health care for part-time nurses. I strongly discourage that. I would encourage that you consider other alternatives to extending the health care as incentive. When I worked as a nurse 15 years ago, the biggest issue we had was our schedule. We liked having days off, we liked having control over our schedule. That seemed to be the bigger issue than anything else. I would consider flex hours as an incentive. I would even consider extra weeks of vacation. I believe that now that we often use that part-time job, most nurses use their part-time job as a supplement income. So they're not depending on that for, you know, their substances. Adding an employee at this time, or any employees at this time, to the benefit pool is counterproductive to the spirit of cutting expenses. I would also encourage another look at the social services for a real possibility of fraud. The social service department has grown to a behemoth size. If you think there isn't fraud going on, we're all blind. I'd also like to say that, let's be open and honest, that this last month, our governor was given a mandate. The mandate was to cut expenses. Taxpayers all over the state said so. So let's try to cooperate with the mood of the electorate and signal to the counties that we would like to tighten the county's budget. Thank you.
Any other citizens' comments? Any other citizens' comments? Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of 5/22/12?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Gabe Newto, second by Supervisor Frederick. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. Minutes are approved. I like this. I want one of these for my kitchen.
For your kitchen?
Must be really fun, huh?
It's called a meat pounder.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Meat tenderizer?
Beef tenderloin.
Agenda item number 4, resolution to approve the following county executive appointments. John Calamari and Sandra Reese to the Commission on Aging, Amy Malott to the Kenosha County Workforce Development Board, and our very own Gabe Newto to the Brookside Board of Trustees.
I'm here this evening to present those to you. I will start with John Calamari. He is currently on the Commission of Aging and has been an active member. He has submitted a brief bio of himself. He's a professor of psychology, and as a clinical psychologist, he researches older adult issues. So he is a valuable member, and I would ask for your endorsement and support for that appointment. Do you want to take these individually, or do you want to just go through them?
Just go through.
Okay. Secondly, we have Sandra Reese, who is also on the Commission of Aging. And since she's a reappointment, both the reappointments are not here this evening. That's been past practice. The Human Service Committee just asked for new folks to come. She has also been a valuable member of the Commission on Aging, has made 14 out of the 22 meetings. The ones she missed were all excused. She's a retired nurse manager from Aurora Healthcare. Has also been on the board of directors for Women's and Children's Horizons, Hospice Alliance, and St. Mary's Catholic Church. I would also ask that you continue her appointment on the Commission on Aging. Third person I have seated to my right here is Amy Malott. Amy would be a new appointment for the Kenosha County Workforce Development Board. She would be taking a spot vacated by Earl Hawley, and Earl was the one who recommended Amy to us. As you can see in her bio, she is a board member for the Kenosha County Long-Term Care Workforce Alliance, has been a board member for the Wisconsin Long-Term Care Workforce Alliance, and the South East Wisconsin Training Group. She currently is employed at Society's Assets, which also does work with our Aging Disability Resource Center in Kenosha. So I would ask for her appointment to the board. And last but certainly not least is Supervisor Gabe Noodle to the Brookside Trustee Board. And I believe you are all familiar with him. And he is also present if you had questions for him about that.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome. So I would ask for your approval of those executive appointments to those three boards.
Does the committee have questions?
Motion to approve as a block.
Motion by Supervisor Frederick. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Johnson. All in favor of approving them as a block?
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye.
Youth and Governance?
Oh, sorry. Right. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Aye.
You look confused. You okay?
What? What is? I'm sorry.
Instead of taking them individually, we're just
going to... Oh, yeah. That's fine. Aye.
Yeah. Sorry, just ask.
Okay.
Grab me, grab the gavel, hit me with it. Something.
Well, don't
just
really do that.
I'd like to see it.
We don't want to break the gavel. So.
Let me know. Just let me know. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Yeah. You're approved.
Thank you.
Agenda item 5, Veteran Services presentation. Good evening, Mr. Green.
Good evening, sir. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Daryl Green. I'm the Kenosha County Veteran Service Officer. I'm here this afternoon to just give you a very quick rundown on what my operation is all about and to let you know what we do and some of the areas that we're heading, some of the places that we're heading, and some of the areas that we are still struggling with. I'm going to go through this very quickly, but if you have any questions at all, feel free to stop me and ask the question. I'm sure I can give you an answer. If everyone has a copy of the briefing, you can see where we're located, our office hours, and we really like our facility where we are right now. The mission is very simple. Our primary objective is to be the representative for our veterans. When they come in and walk in that door, our mission is to try to assist them in any way we can to assist them in the benefits that they or their spouses or their children have earned through the service that they have provided to our country. And if you notice, I talk about no cost. This is a free service that we provide to our veterans. The reason I put no cost on there is because if you've been reading about all the scammers that are going around the country right now, there are several companies right now that are going around using the names of veteran this or veteran that. They're not a part of the VA. They're not a part of the government. There are businesses that are trying to get in the door with our veterans and offer them a service and tell the veterans there's no charge to them, and there really is a charge. It's on the back end, but the bottom line is we're trying to discourage our veterans from going to these people because they're paying when they get the same service from us for free. Every county and state has an office like ours. Each one's different. And so I make everyone understand, a lot of people that call us, they always ask, is this the VA? We are not the VA. We don't work for the state. We are county employees. We work for the county. You are our employees. Real quickly, there's three of us in the office. Myself, Mike Roscoe, and Eileen Kaler. Between the two of them, they've been in the office. They've got over 40 years of experience in the office. I've been there for 4 years. We also have a Veterans Service Commission that's appointed by the county executive. This is by law. We have to have this commission, a three-man commission. Their primary function is to assist providing assistance to the needy veterans. And we try to meet once a month. Sometimes there's nothing for us to discuss if we don't meet. But when we do meet, they come in and we have an open forum just like we have here. Citizens, comments, if they want to come in and talk to us. Otherwise, we'll discuss issues that we have for providing services to our veterans. What kind of services we're talking about? If a veteran has a need for some rent, electrical bill, something like that, and if we have the money, which most of the time we don't have, we try to assist them. That's our Veterans Commission. And each one has a three-year time frame to serve as a commissioner, and it can be renewed every year. And three that I have right now, they've been on the commission for two terms. How many veterans do we have in Kenosha? Next chart. The VA stats show we have about 12,000 veterans. I have over 40,000 files in my office. Now, there's a lot of reasons the numbers are different, but primarily the VA uses, the state uses the number of vets that go to the facility, the medical facilities, and go ask for other services. That's where they get their numbers from. If you look at my numbers, you can see the war periods, the veterans that we have. Of that 39, almost 40,000 veterans we have, 17,000 of those veterans are deceased. And we get the question of why do you have keep the files on the deceased? Well, we have spouses, we have children, and we actually have people come in and say, my grandfather served in the Civil War. Do you have anything on it? We do have some Civil War files. We actually have a couple of American Revolution files. And we try to provide it to the families so they can build history on their ancestors that served our country. Yes?
Do we have anybody alive from WW1?
No. We do not.
At first, I saw 3897. I said,
those are
that's all.
Those are just files that we have. Those are all the WW1 veterans are all deceased.
Okay.
How much does it cost to run for our office? You can see the number there. It's about $286,000. I expect that number to be a little smaller this year, a little less because one of our employees that retired a couple of years ago is falling off this year because of. He reaches the age of 65, so we will no longer have responsibility to handle his insurance premiums or anything like that. So actually, our expenditures this year should be a little less than they were last year. The next numbers that you see on there, I just want to bring this up. This is not money that you as a board can put your hands on, but this is money that comes into the community every year. And if you can see there, we had about 174 home loans that the VA actually co-signs for an amount of about $35 million. Right now, we've got about, last year, just last year alone, the VA paid about $24 million in benefits for compensation and pension, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. As you can see, last year we had about 310 veterans that died. We provide burial flags for them. We also, there's some benefits they can get if under certain circumstances. And we also provide the flags and the flag holders for each of the families. And many of you on Memorial Day got the chance to see many of those flags. And then the big thing, one of the big things right now is this property tax credits. Last year, from July of 2010 to June of 2011, we had about $373,000 that were giving back to the veterans. Now, this property tax credit, if you're a 100% disabled veteran, under the law that they have now, you can submit your application to get your property tax reimbursed to you. Last year, we had about $373,000. This year, I expect it to be more like $500,000. It's increasing every year. And so that's a very good benefit for our veterans.
What about if you're partial disabled?
Have to be 100% disabled.
100%.
100%. That's the only way you can get this benefit. Okay. I'm just going to very quickly talk about, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on this, but these are some of the things that we do for our veterans when they come in. Primarily, disability compensation. Primarily, all that means is that a veteran comes in, he says, I was in the service, I went overseas, I saw a lot of terrible, horrible things over there, and I'm having some problems. We might consider that PTSD. That would be a disability compensation. We also provide a non-service-connected pension. That's for our veterans that are either 100% disabled or over the age of 65, or they can't work for whatever reason. Then, depending on their income and their overall situation, they can receive up to about $1,500 a month from the VA. That's called a non-service-connected pension. Aid and attendance is just what it sounds like. If a veteran is so ill or his spouse is so ill, basically the veteran, not the spouse, and they need someone to provide aid to them and constant attendance, then they get a little bit more money, additional money, to assist them. The veterans' education benefits right now are superb. The post 9/11 GI Bill that just came out a couple of years ago, one of the best things that's happened to our veterans, because not only do they get to go to school for free and the government pays for it, we also pay them a stipend. Back in my day, if you've seen that commercial, these kids are great now. We didn't get that, but it's really a nice feature for our veterans because now they can go to school and they also get monies to help them with their rent and for a cost of living. I'm going to talk about the Wisconsin Veteran Home a little separately, so we'll talk about that. And the burial funeral benefit, we'll talk about that in just a minute also. The Wisconsin Veterans Home, the only reason I talk about that is because it's very similar to what we have at Brookside. The difference is it's for our veterans. It provides basically the same kind of services. We have two right now, one in King, up in King, Wisconsin. We also have one here in Union Grove. And there's a new one being built in Chippewa Falls. As you can see, they can pay by private pay, Medicaid if they're eligible. And then if you're a 70% or more greater disabled veteran, you get to stay in a nursing home absolutely free. They had two assisted livings out at Union Grove. They were losing money, so they closed one down and converted to a nursing home. So if you have not been out to the cemetery out at Union Grove or the nursing home, I encourage you to go out and take a look at it. Both of them are pretty, very spectacular, very beautiful. If you get a chance to go by King sometime up in Wapaka, I think it is, you should stop by there. It's right on the lake. Just absolutely gorgeous. And the veterans actually love it up there. Union Grove's nice, but it's kind of in the cornfield, so it's not quite as nice.
Kind of.
You can see the kind of services they provide there. It's basically the same kind of services that they provide at Brookside. The biggest difference at Union Grove versus most of the nursing homes here in town is that sometimes you can be in a nursing home and you have to pay additional cost to get some of the other services, whereas in Union Grove, all the services are included in the price. Now, is the price much cheaper than it is to stay in some of the nursing homes here? No, it's not. It's very difficult for us sometimes to get veterans to go out there. Many of the veterans go out there because they like to be around other veterans, but the reality of it is a lot of families don't like to go all the way to Union Grove, even though it's not that far, but they can keep right here in town. So we have a hard time getting that. You can see some of the activities that they do for our veterans. They do a lot of stuff for our veterans out there, just like most of the nursing homes here in town. If a veteran passes, there's a couple things that can happen to him. You can pre-register to be buried out at Union Grove. I'm pre-registered out there. You can also pre-register your spouse so that if one or the other passes away, you can be buried out there. Now, what does that mean? Is it a cost saving for our veterans? Absolutely, because many of the times just to the cost of opening and closing a grave is very expensive. I mean, you're talking $800-$900 just to open and close a grave. That's absolutely free out at Union Grove. Except for the spouse, they have to pay the total they have to pay is like around $600, which is still much, much cheaper than anything in town. The veteran is no cost to him. We provide a flag. If they want honors, we provide honors for them. That's where we have some veterans come out and they provide the 21-gun salute and they also do taps for the veterans. So that's all part of the service that they provide. They can, many veterans can be buried in their national or state cemeteries. If you're killed in action or you serve more than 20 years, you can be buried in a national cemetery. And then, of course, we give the flag to the next of kin, which gets to be pretty interesting sometimes about who gets that flag. Some of the upcoming events that we have going on right now. This Sunday, as a matter of fact, every veteran that wants to go to the Milwaukee County Zoo can come to our office. We have tickets. We can give them out. Last year, we gave out 400 tickets. This year, we're only giving out less than 200. Why is that? Primarily because they stopped serving food. So our veterans decided they didn't go, they weren't going to get free food. But it's a pretty nice affair. You can get up to 10 tickets to take your family, and it's a pretty good affair. We've got a veterans job fair over in the Gateway on July the 18th, strictly for veterans. No one else but veterans are entitled to come to that one. We're going to hopefully get a good turnout for that. We didn't get a very good turnout at the TRICARE job fair, but I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that it's out in the Western County, so we'll see how we do this one, see if that theory holds up. On the 25th of August, we're going to have a veterans stand down. That's where we have a program for our homeless veterans. We're going to do it at Racine this year. Next year, it's going to come back to Kenosha. We rotate every other year. The primary, what we do there is our veterans come in, we give them breakfast, and then we have various stations they can go to. They can get a haircut there. They can get some clothing items there. We have doctors there to check their blood pressure. We have someone there to fix glasses if they need to. It's a pretty nice event, and then we close it out by providing all of them with a lunch. That will be on Saturday the 25th at the Veterans Center in Racine.
Forgive me for interrupting. How exactly do you find homeless veterans?
We don't, and that's part of the problem. And you hear a lot of talk about homeless veterans, and there are a lot of homeless veterans, but most of the homeless veterans are centered primarily around the urban areas like Milwaukee. I went out on this thing they call PIT, the PIT thing, where you go out and you look for homeless people. We went out in January. We didn't see one single homeless veteran. We didn't see but a couple homeless people. Of course, it was a lot colder then. They're having another one in July. We're going out again. We're going to try to find as many as we can. So if you hear of any homeless veteran, if you know of any homeless veteran, please give my office a call, because there's really no reason the veteran should be homeless. I mean, there are enough benefits and enough programs that there should be no veterans homeless in our area. We have a place out in the Union Grove called VAP, where we have about 32 veterans that are homeless. They stay out there. They've got openings right now, which is kind of unusual, because normally there's a waiting list to be out there, but right now they've got a couple openings. There's a couple programs up in Milwaukee that are available to get our veterans off the street. We find that most veterans that are homeless are transient. They'll come in, they'll ask for something, they'll get it, boom, they're gone. So it's not a real big issue in Kenosha, but if I'm wrong on that, which I've been known to be wrong occasionally, you can certainly contact me, and we will do everything we can to find out that veteran, or veteran and his spouse, and veteran and their children. We'll do everything we can to help them get them off the streets. That answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
On September 9th, we've got this thing called Pillars of Honors. The county exec contacted me. There is an organization in Illinois that has a replica of the World War II Memorial. We're going to bring that to Kenosha on September 9th, which is a Sunday. It's going to start about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're hoping to get somewhere between 250-plus people there. Many of our veterans, as you know, have flown to Washington and got a chance to see the memorial. Many of them have not for various reasons, but a lot of families can't go because of the expense. So we're going to bring that here in town. We're going to invite all our World War II veterans. They will be recognized, and then everyone will get a chance to see what the replica looks like. It's a tabletop-type replica, and we're going to have it at the UAW. We need a big building that has a lot of space, and we also wanted a building where we could have easy access for our veterans that are in wheelchairs. So that's going to be a pretty big event. You'll start seeing the advertising on that here in the next couple of weeks. Ask your support and pass the word on that, and if you know some veterans that are World War II veterans, we'll put out the information who they need to contact, but we certainly want to recognize all of our World War II veterans and their families. And then the last thing is Veterans Day. Of course, we have this every year. My goal this year, and I'm not having much success with it, but I'm hoping to go through with it. Excuse me. I would like to have a single Veterans Day ceremony. Right now, many of you are aware that when we have Veterans Day, each post in both Kenosha, Summers, Pleasant Prairie, out in Western County, they have their separate ceremonies. And the county and the community don't really get a feel for what happens on Veterans Day. I'm trying to set up a one-location event where we'll get all 17 of our various service organizations to come in and let the community see the service organizations and what they do in the community. And there are a lot of events that go on in the community through our service organizations, but no one knows about it. And unfortunately, we have Veterans Day and Memorial Day. Myself, the county exec, the mayor, all the elected officials, they are running all over the place. And by the end of the day, we're pretty drained because we're trying to go to everybody's event. We can't go to all because most of them are, you know, one's at 9 o'clock, another's at 10 o'clock, another's at 11 o'clock. They're all an hour long, so you can't get there. But if we could just have one ceremony in one location with all 17 of our service organizations, we could bring some children in. They can get a chance to see what our veterans have done, what they're doing. It's a great recruiting tool for people. A lot of people don't even know about our service organizations, what they do. And by service organizations, I'm talking about the VFW, the American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, Military Order, Purple Heart, and they're all over the county. So I would like to do that. And if you have a chance to talk to any of the commanders or any of the people in these organizations, tell them what I'm trying to do. A lot of them, they feel like I'm trying to take their program away from them, and that's not the case. I'm just trying to showcase them to the community. And also, if we do it early enough, which I'm hoping we can do it early enough, they can still have their own special event. So if you get an opportunity to talk to some of them, I'll appreciate any kind words you would say about that. Okay, and what do we have ongoing right now? Some of you have probably heard about this, but we're trying to establish a veterans court in this particular area. It would be for Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth. Potentially, Waukesha might be a part of that. And that's very much like the juvenile courts and very much like the drug courts, but it'd be for veterans. That's being established right now, and they're working on that. And hopefully within next year, we'll have that established. Office automation is coming along very well. We went from typewriters to computers, and hopefully we're going to get to scanners here in a very short period of time. The county's been very good about helping us convert, so hopefully that will get all accomplished within next year.
Sorry, how long ago did the typewriters disappear?
Typewriters are still in my office. In fact, very many people come to my office and they always go, what's that? they're shocked. We still have typewriters in our office. We actually do. And it's a difficult weaning process, but it's coming along. Transportation is still an issue for me. Most of our veterans go to North Chicago, veterans, VA Medical Center down in North Chicago. There's one in Sublocky also. But the clinic that we have, which is right around the corner there, we have a VA clinic here in town, it belongs to North Chicago. So most of our veterans, they go to the clinic here, they go down to North Chicago. When I'm talking about transportation, many of our veterans don't have transportation down there. There's no bus that goes down there. The train doesn't run down long enough. So many of our veterans have a hard time getting down there. I just met with the folks down in North Chicago, and they're going to look at some avenues to try to help assist us with that. But that's a real problem, because we have a lot of veterans coming every day. Either they can't drive, or they don't have the money, or whatever it is, whatever reason. So we're trying to figure out a way to help our veterans get down to their medical appointments. The veterans clinic that I just mentioned right around the corner over here, they are looking for a new home. If you have a good idea about where they can move to, they want to expand. They don't have a pharmacy in that clinic, and they want to add a pharmacy to it, because right now, even when I want to get my medication from the VA, I either have to go down to North Chicago to get it, or they mail it to me, and it's a cost of $8 a pop, which is not very much, but that's $8 per prescription. So for many of our veterans, it can turn out to be pretty expensive. So we're looking for a place to move the clinic, so if you have any ideas on that, I would certainly appreciate assistance on that. Yes.
What kind of square footage are you looking for? What do you have now, and what are you looking for?
I don't know if you, right around the corner, there's a two-story building. Actually, it's three stories. It's a basement. It's a tri-level is what it is. Mm-hmm. And they have two doctors there. They have two psychiatrists there. They have a couple of nurses. They have a very small pharmaceutical facility. So they have no real lab capability. So mm-hmm. they're looking to build it up so that they can start doing providing more services. And right now they can't provide enough services. So I don't know what the square footage is, but I can find out what they're looking for.
So they just want to establish a full service clinic with.
That's correct. That's what they want to do. Okay. Yes. We've talked about the next two assisting our needy veterans. The only thing I'll say about that is that we do have a lot of veterans that need a lot of assistance. We just put in a new hot water heater for a veteran who didn't have hot water for 9 weeks. We've just assisted another veteran that just him and his wife lost their home, so we had to find another place for them to get into, so we had to provide them with some assistance getting into their new home. So it's a constant need of people coming in asking for help. As you well know, human services, that's what we do, so it's just something that we're continuously working on.
Is that assistance out of county levy, or is that an allocation, state or federal? How does that work?
It's a combination of both. Right now, the state gives me $13,000 to help with my assistance to needy veterans. The county gave us some extra money this year, primarily because that veteran I talked about that left, that's dropping from our roll, there was a little extra money there, so they gave us some extra money this year. Whether or not we're going to get that next year, I don't know. Hopefully we will. It was an amount of about $8,000 is what they gave us. So. And we've gone through more than half of that right now. So I think probably by the end of the year, I mean, towards the end of the year, we'll probably run out of money for veterans, for assistance. And then the final thing that I talked about right there is just communication with the veteran community is very difficult. We have a lot of recommendations. People are always saying, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? Well, we've tried many of them. The biggest issue I have is our veterans, most of our veterans, as you can see, the numbers are senior veterans. They don't read the newspaper, or they do. They don't go on the website. They don't use a computer. And unfortunately, a lot of veterans are missing out on benefits that they might encounter. And I'll give you the most typical example, and that's a veteran, a World War II veteran, passes. Okay, he died of a service-connected disability. In other words, he had a heart problem that he had to serve. He's died of that service. Well, his wife is entitled to something called DIC, and she can get a permanent check for about $1,400 a month if she knows about it. Unfortunately, many of them don't know about it. And they walk in our office, and we try to assist them, to get this benefit. But they don't get it sometimes. And that's because they don't know about it. Education is the other one that's really big. If you're a 30% more disabled veteran here in the state of Wisconsin, the state will pay for your education. Not only will they pay for your education, they will pay for your wife's education. They will pay for your children's education. I have a lot of veterans coming to my office. They're 70% or higher, 30% or higher. And they're talking to me, and they're bragging about their kids. Yeah, my kid's doing great. They just finished college. They got to go to California because they got a $100,000 student loan. Well, he was a 70% disabled veteran. If he came to our office, we could have told him, your daughter could have student for free in the state of Wisconsin. So those are the kind of things that we want to communicate out to the veterans. And it's very difficult to do that, particularly in Western County. I used to go to Western County and set up out there and never saw a veteran all day long. They would come to the office. So communication is a big key for my office, and we're working on that. Hopefully, if you have any ideas, I would certainly appreciate it. That concludes my briefing. If you have any questions. Yes.
Supervisor McMorrow?
I have one question for you. This total expenditure is $1 million. So is that mostly the salaries of the employees?
Yes, it is.
Because a lot of what you do when they come is help tap into what the government offers them.
That's correct. That is primarily what our office is, all salaries and office.
Little office stuff. I guess. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Item 6, BCFS presentation, Child Protective Services Unit. Good evening, Mr. Rogers.
Hi, good evening. Thank you, Chairman. And welcome, Human Services Committee board members. There's some new faces on the board, Human Service Committee, I should say, and on the board as a whole. So I'm Ron Rogers. I'm the Director of Division of Children and Family Services for Kenosha County. And what I thought I'd do this evening is we have two pieces of information. One I'd like to start with is give an overview of DCFS, specifically Child Protective Services. For some of you who've been on the committee before, you may have heard this already, but I know we have some new members here on the committee. And then we'll talk real specifically about the work our county social workers do and how it relates to protecting children and keeping them safe. So I didn't bring a nice PowerPoint like my counterpart in the Veterans Administration did, but in your packet there's some information, and there's a Chief in Health Division of Children and Family Services. And just to give you a brief overview, DCFS really consists of Child Protective Services, the Ongoing Services Unit, the Juvenile Court Services Unit, that's the unit that works with delinquent youth and their families, our Prevention Services Network, which is prevention services geared to preventing child abuse and neglect. And we also have a number of targeted initiatives, including Families First, which is a wraparound program for severely emotionally disturbed youth, the Children's Long-Term Support Waiver, which is a program funded specifically to work with disabled children age literally 0 to 3, and our Family Support Program. And what I'd like to do tonight is just focus primarily on Child Protective Services, because I think sometimes people sort of forget about what is involved in investigating child abuse and neglect. I just want to get you sort of brought up to speed on what the current state is in the state of Wisconsin as far as state standards. Child Protective Services is considered a specialized field of child welfare, and it's really governed by Wisconsin state statutes, federal rules and regulations, and Wisconsin state standards. And really, we get all of our authority to go investigate child abuse and neglect through the Wisconsin statutes. And primarily, it's warranted whenever there is a report that reaches a certain level of, for lack of a better term, evidence, as the reporter calls it in, that a child may be unsafe, abused, or neglected, or be at risk of abuse and neglect. And primarily, people make those reports over the phone still, although we do get reports over the internet, and occasionally we can get something in the mail, a letter. But we prefer to talk to people over the phone, or we'll have people actually walk in our building. One of our biggest partners in reporting child abuse and neglect is teachers. And schools are our biggest source of reports during the school year, because kids go to school and kids come into school looking distressed. Maybe they have a mark or a bruise on them that looks suspicious, or they look unkempt or unclean. So often teachers are our biggest source of reports. It's not unusual that during the summer months our calls into the office decrease a little bit because of that. Child Protective Services, the scope of it includes an access point, and this is governed by state statutes. Initial assessment, which we used to call investigation of child abuse and neglect, and then ongoing services. And what I'd like to focus on mostly tonight is the investigative piece, what we now call initial assessment. And what our primary role in that is, in our access office, is we take in calls from the community when people say someone is harmed or they're worried about a child. And in, you know, a dozen years ago, 15 years ago, that call taking was pretty simplified. It was often, you know, give me the name of the child, the name of the family, where do they live, what do you think is wrong. There'd be a few questions asked, and we would sort of put together a brief bit of information and then make a decision whether or not to go out and investigate that. The state has really increased our standards for that office. And now we really gather into much more of a dialogue with people over the phone. And during that dialogue, we are looking for, you know, we are looking to identify the families that we must respond to and to determine the urgency of the response time. And actually, we actually initiate an assessment of safety over the phone. We start asking people questions about, you know, are they seeing an actual injury or not? What do they know about the parenting practices of the parent, if they know that? So if a teacher calls in, they may say that they've had a lot of contact with the mother, maybe less contact with the father. We'll actually get a dialogue with that reporter over the phone to get more information about their family so we can make a better decision on how quickly we should go out to check on the safety of that child, and or whether it even reaches statutory requirements for us to go do that intervention. And the reason I focus on that last part is, if it is an allegation of child abuse, then we are allowed to meet with kids in the school without parents' permission, talk to them privately. All of that is allowed under Wisconsin state statutes, and often it's the better way to start the investigative process. But if we just have people call in where it doesn't meet the requirement of child abuse and neglect, and it's just maybe a general concern about a family, we may offer services to that family, but we call that, instead of that being a child protective service report, we call that a services intake. And then we have a different standard that we have to follow. And in cases like that, we need to approach the parents first and really just offer more help or assistance. But focusing again on child protective services, as these calls come in, the workers on the phone who take these calls are going to be assessing and analyzing present and impending danger, threats to child safety, and you know that, and they will look to see what exactly is being reported is the abuse. Is it neglect? Is it a dirty, unkempt home? Is it a child that's always walking around that appears to be hungry in dirty clothing? Is it a kid coming into school with a large mark on their face? And when the child reports to the teacher what happened, it just doesn't seem to hold water. You know, it doesn't, they say, they make some excuse about the mark that doesn't seem to make sense, and the teacher gathers more information about the child that makes the teacher think this may be abused by a parent. The real focus of Child Protective Services is to engage the family, to engage in a very comprehensive initial assessment of the family. And so that's a big change in our practice as well. In the last 5 years, new state standards came out, and in many years ago, people sometimes would say that Child Protective Services was sort of incident-focused, meaning they were looking at, did the child get hurt on this day at this time by this person? And really, our requirement now by state statute is to do a much more broader assessment of family functioning than just that maltreatment. So if we have an allegation of child maltreatment, we are now required, when we go out, to initiate that investigation, which we now call an initial assessment. We must contact the identified child who is alleged to have been maltreated. If that child has siblings, we must see and talk to all the siblings. We're going to talk to every adult that lives in that home if the maltreatment is alleged to be occurred by a parent. We will also talk to the alleged maltreater themselves and the alleged non-maltreating parent. And we are going to be doing an assessment looking at the child functioning of every child in the home. How are they doing? You know, where are they developmentally? You know, is this a five-year-old that's really on track developmentally, ready for kindergarten, or is this a special needs child that really is functioning at a lower level? Same with a child who's 10 or 8 or 12 or 15. We're going to look at adult functioning. How are the parents functioning in their lives as adults? Are they working? Where are they working? How are they managing their life? How is the family functioning as a whole? How is this family running their household? And as we're looking at all that, we are looking at signs of protective factors in parents, i.e. parents seem to show genuine care and concern for their children. They are doing things to protect them from harm, just like most of you had, you know, our parents that did that naturally, and most of, and we grew up in homes where parents sort of protected us naturally, i.e. they don't let a little kid run in the street, they keep the poisons out of hands of little kids, they keep the liquor stored high enough so a little kid can't get into a bottle of alcohol, things like that, protective capacities. And we're also going to look for any risk factors, things that show that parents are not very protective. We are very concerned with the maltreatment allegation itself, and during that initial assessment, we will be interviewing the child, and we have partners in this process. One partner is the Children's Hospital of Milwaukee, which operates the Child Advocacy Center here in Kenosha. That center can conduct forensic interviews with children that are, you know, at a level that they can speak and answer questions, and they can do a forensic interview with a child who has been maltreated so that that interview is recorded, which allows, which helps the district attorney in prosecuting the maltreating adult, and it saves the child from maybe having to testify in court. The Child Advocacy Center also provides a nurse practitioner, or nurse physician's assistant, excuse me, who specializes in child abuse and neglect. So when we bring children who we believe have been abused or neglected to that office, they can do a full physical, which is really looking not just for signs of the current alleged abuse, but also for signs of past abuse, because there can be signs of old marks, scarring, things like that. And we want to get the full comprehensive picture. When that process occurs over a number of days, all over the state of Wisconsin, Child Protective Services is primarily done by counties. It is really county administered, state supervised, with one exception, Milwaukee County, where they actually took over the Child Protective Services function for Milwaukee County. The other 71 counties are all county run systems, with the state setting the rules and regulations through standards and state statutes and federal regulations. What this looks like in Kenosha, and Kenosha is sort of unique, and if you want to flip the page, I'll show you the org chart to give you a sense of what little part of DCFS I'm talking about. I'm talking about the far left-hand side of this organizational chart. And what I'm primarily talking about is under Joanne Slater, there's an access office We have two staff that take calls Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. We have seven initial assessment workers working in the field at any given time. That's new. We used to have six. We reallocated one of our social work positions because, as I'm going to explain later, we have an increase in activity in our Child Protective Services unit. As the economy has gone down, and as a citizen made a comment earlier about the tight economic times, actually there's a corresponding need often in human services when times get tough, and we have seen an increase in the number of referrals for Child Protective Services. So what you see in this org chart are the names of the workers that do our Child Protective Service work. And then, in addition, Kenosha is unique in that after hours, our Child Protective Services investigations can be done by adult juvenile crisis. And juvenile crisis really is twofold. They respond to children with mental health issues or sort of family, general family disturbances, but they also have been trained to respond to child abuse and neglect referrals. And so they will take calls after hours or on the weekends, and they can also take some overflow Child Protective Service reports in times when we get very busy.
And that's contracted?
That's through Kenosha Human Development Services. Right. They also run Adult Crisis, which responds to mental health needs of adults. Yeah. So what happens then in this work is to give you a sense of the volume, if you look at this color chart here, this is the state versus Kenosha County. We received for the first 5 months of the year, we received, if you add up the 521 and the 370, we received about 890 reports of child abuse and neglect. Screen in means those are cases that we actively investigated, which is a 370. Screen outs are cases that either did not meet the statutory requirements for us to go out, or they could be duplicate referrals. We are now required to document all calls into our Child Protective Services office. The result of that is it is not that unusual to have a call come in from one person, a teacher, someone else at the school make the same call, or the police to send us a referral on a report that we've already heard about the day before, and the police are sending us a referral. We're required now to document all of that in this automated statewide, it's called the State Automated Child Welfare Information System. The nickname for it is SACWIS, S-A-C-W-I-S. And it's a state-run system throughout the state of Wisconsin, and every report of child abuse and neglect is recorded in it, and all casework is now done on this computer system. So the days of taking a pen and putting it to paper and writing notes by hand or making a plan are long gone. That's all done over now in our office laptops and docking stations and things like that. In the state of Wisconsin as a whole on this chart, you can see for the first 5 months of the year, the state screened in. That means Kenosha's included in this number, 12,000 reports. What's good to note about this is that we're at this approximately the same ratio as the state of Wisconsin. So the fact that there are more cases screened out really is not the concerning issue. The issue would be if we were screening out a greater percentage than the state of Wisconsin. We are not. We're following the state standards, and the state as a whole, as these standards have been adopted, has moved to now screening out more than they screen in. The reason we talk about screening out and screening in is in every county in the state of Wisconsin, there's only so many dollars that you can use in staff for social workers. It's not like firemen, where generally if they're told to rush out the door, they hop on the engine, and they're out the door immediately. We get calls every day. We get calls constantly, and we have to prioritize those calls. So as we engage in this assessment over the phone and we assess to see the danger threats of children, we make decisions on how quickly we need to respond. Vulnerable children, and by very one simple definition is every child 6 and under is automatically vulnerable. Most children over 6 are vulnerable, but we gather more information to assess where the vulnerability is. You can make an argument that depending on a disability, a child who's 16 or 17 could be vulnerable if they're a disabled child. Depending on child vulnerability and the nature of the allegation, we will determine how quickly to go out and start that initial assessment. We have three broad categories within same day / 24 hours, 48 hours, 24 to 48 hours, and then 5 business days. Most categories, we often get out there sooner than the category that is labeled. Because there's 7 initial assessment workers, it is not unusual at all for workers in that unit to receive more than one referral every week. It's not unusual for them to get, you know, 2 or 3 referrals a week, meaning they might get one on Monday, maybe they don't get one Tuesday, get another one Wednesday, they get another one Friday. They are often working on about 8 to 9 cases at once at various levels of the initial assessment process. Some cases where they're out going out immediately to assess for safety of children and take appropriate action immediately. Some other cases where the initial assessment is taking longer to complete because you have to gather more information to make a determination if a child's been harmed or not. And in some cases, when a child has been harmed, we are taking action to protect that child. Well, I should say that backwards. Every time there's a child that's been harmed, we're always taking action to protect that child. And frequently that results in court intervention. It's rare that it does not, actually. So our other partner in this is the District Attorney's Office and Children's Court. And so when we have to place children in foster care to protect them because the parents have maltreated them and we don't believe we can maintain them safely in their home, we then request that we take those kids into temporary physical custody. We make that request to juvenile court intake, and then we proceed with the court process, and then we're going to go forward with court jurisdiction on those cases. What that means in numbers of cases, now if you flip this over, and this is the sort of the point that I was over the last, well, we have listed here 5 complete years with the 6th year occurring now. The chart on the top of the page in orange is screened in Child Protective Services. The blue lines are screened in for services, child welfare services, meaning, again, children may have needs, families are at needs. We feel there's a risk, perhaps, that things could get worse, but there is not a level to initiate a formal investigation of child abuse and neglect. So these are the numbers. Over in 2007, 668 screened in, meaning we responded to that many. It climbed in 2008 to 802, dropped in 9 to 719. In 10, it was 852, 11, 761. And if we stay on the same track right now, we would hit a record this year. I don't know if we will. Sometimes things change in the second half of the year. So what that means is that you have approximately between 11 and 12, 760 to maybe 850, 60 Child Protective Services initial assessments that are conducted. The majority of those are conducted by our 7 initial assessment social workers. So, and then with some of the overflow being to juvenile crisis. So each worker is really can be doing like about 100 of these in a year, plus some service intakes. And that is busy, if you think about it. You know, if you think of, let's take the number 800 in a year, referrals in a year, you know, you divide that by 850, divide that by 12, that's 70 referrals that we respond to every month, you know, over 12 months in a year. The chart in the bottom of the page shows you what types of allegations we're getting. The number of referrals for physical abuse is the blue line, which is projected in 2011 was slightly over 400. For neglect was about 275, and sexual abuse approximately 100. Those are referrals. Those aren't cases that are necessarily go forward in juvenile court. All of this, though, is work that must be done per Wisconsin state statute, per Wisconsin standards, done by county social workers. At the end of that initial assessment period, approximately, and this seems to be holding true every year, of all of these initial assessments, about 90 to 100 every year need formal court intervention and need court orders to continually protect those children. And those cases then go forward in juvenile court, and they are entered in under a CHIPS order, and those cases are then transferred to our ongoing unit, which I won't go into as much detail about tonight. But that's the unit of social workers that takes those, works with those families to work on whatever the issues are that are putting kids at risk, and providing services for those families to improve parenting skills, to work with drug and alcohol problems, to work with anger control problems, domestic violence issues, so that children can be returned safely to their homes. And at that point, we're in the juvenile court, and those kids are under court jurisdiction. The other cases, there are cases sometimes that are found to have been victims of abuse, but it do not get referred into juvenile court because there are cases where people who are not family members have maltreated children. There are cases where, camp counselors, teachers, people on the street have abused children, and parents are very protected. We still go through the initial assessment process, but in cases like that, even though a child may have been maltreated, if the parent's protective and appropriate, we don't need to get involved in the juvenile court process. So,
I'm sorry, could you say that again, please?
Sure.
I'm saying that I send my child to school. Something happens to him at school.
Ma'am, point of order. Ma'am, no, right of order. Mom, right of order. That is my mom.
Really?
Yeah. But if you'd like to pass a note to the chair, we might be able to address your question.
I have a feeling. I have a feeling he's waiting all night to let her ask the question.
She can write a note to the chair. Please continue.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Any questions from the committee before I go further? Just because I've given you a lot of information right now.
You also get a lot of referrals from the ER, right, and the physicians?
Oh, yes. Yes, we do. That's our other big partners, are the physicians. Our biggest referrals are the teachers, probably. Healthcare providers are second. Child care also gives us a lot of referrals. Child care is really some extra eyes and ears on protecting children. Yeah. I don't want to answer the question until it gets referred to, but just to clarify. If you think of the word of child protective services, the biggest, the most detailed initial assessment is done when the allegation is a parent or adult caregiver in the home has harmed the child. Because those are the people that are supposed to protect children. Your parents are supposed to protect you. So those is the most detailed initial assessment that we do. If there is an allegation that a teacher, for example, has harmed a child, then we have a slightly different standard we have to follow. We still do an initial assessment, but we actually start often by talking to the parent and getting their read on what's happened. And the other thing that I probably failed to focus on clearly is a lot of our work is done in partnership with law enforcement. Because law enforcement's role is to find the people who've maltreated children and arrest them and move them forward into the criminal court process. So we frequently have a very close working relationship with Kenosha Police Department and Kenosha Sheriff's Department. Was there another question or not?
I have no note as of yet, so
okay.
Please continue.
All right, never mind. The other chart I wanted to just give you a sense of is how we are doing compared to other counties in the state and the quality of our work and where we stand. Kenosha is considered by the state of Wisconsin a driver county, and by that we are actually one of the top 8 child welfare counties in the state of Wisconsin. So if you, we have the, we're one of the top eight counties that has a majority of child welfare business, so to speak, in the state of Wisconsin. We get more referrals, we do more initial assessments. You know, there's some very small counties in northern Wisconsin that do very little of this work. They're very less populated than we are. Just to going down here, we are often measured in comparison to Brown County, Racine County, our neighbor, Rock County, Winnebago, Outagamie, Milwaukee County, which is much larger than any other county in the state. They're almost really in a different world as far as the volume of work they have. Dane County, and then I asterisked on this chart Waukesha County, which has a larger population than us, but really has less child welfare referrals. But they, I always like to look at Waukesha. They do, we do very good work. Waukesha does very good work. And I always like to see how we compare to Waukesha. And then sort of the statewide numbers. And what I am just reporting here is that I took a snapshot of 1 month. And, you know, we're required to have all of our initial assessments completely be finished and fully documented within 60 days of the phone call coming in the office. In practical matters, the initial assessments are often are completed in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But every once in a while, if we get very busy, to finalize the documentation can take longer, or every once in a while, an initial assessment itself can take longer because it has to do with more broader medical issues and not necessarily an injury. How we're doing compared to our driver counties in last month is we were leading the pack in getting these approved within 60 days. We've got 96.6% approved, much better than Milwaukee County or Outagamie or Dane County, and right up there with Brown County, Racine, and Waukesha.
I just want everybody to understand that that 60-day period is certainly it's a paperwork period.
Yes.
But the action that's occurring with that family and that child, if that child needed to be removed, we don't wait to the 60th day to remove that kid.
No.
We would take them out immediately if there's a safety issue.
Thank you. Yeah.
So this is really a paperwork issue, not a how we're dealing with the family and what's going on out there. We just don't.
Right.
I didn't want folks to walk away.
No,
you got 60 days to get the call.
No, not at all. No, the response is literally usually 24 to 48 hours. And one of the biggest things the social workers do when they first walk into the situation is they assess for present danger. Are there children at risk or in danger immediately? If they are, we take action immediately, which often involves placing kids into foster care or can involve bringing in in-home safety services to mitigate the safety threats while we continue the initial assessment. Then, as we finish the initial assessment, we reassess safety again. We look for a broader set of safety factors called impending danger threats, which you learn about those as you gather all that information I talked about in the initial assessment process. So we will take action immediately. And this unit is really, in many ways, touches more lives than the other two units in DCFS. Because if you, all of those initial assessments are done primarily by the initial assessment board. So we are, you know, we're contacting, you know, over 700 people in a year, families, plus a number of families that are asking just for services. So, that really concludes that overview of CPS. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't have a question. I've worked with Human Services for all the terms I've been with Kenosha County Board. I do believe that we do a very good job. I have an opportunity. I work in Kenosha Unified Schools, and this particular entity right here, they do a very good job protecting the children and making sure that they follow up timely to ensure that the children in Kenosha County are safe. Just want to encourage you all to continue to do a good job, keep us in the loop. You've never had a problem before, and so continue to come to this board and keep us informed about anything that you may need our assistance with. It's, to me, personally, It's very important that we provide a very safe environment. Kenosha County is growing. There's more children, and there are some different entities out there that could potentially harm our children. So I'm glad that we had this presentation to inform the newer supervisors that you know there are things in place to protect the children in the county. So thank you.
Thank you.
Supervisor Decker?
Yes.
Are all these people on the flowchart employees of the county, or are some of them subcontracted out through RFPs?
Well, good question. And it's not highlighted in your color coordinated anyway, so I'll just sort of point out the county employees. I'm the director of forest, the lead supervisor. So if you look from left to right, The Child Protection Services Unit started, all those people below Joanne Slater are all county employees, county social workers. The next column is the ongoing unit, and that supervisor currently, temporarily in there, is Eric Calvino. Our long-term supervisor there retired, Leon Potter. So Mr. Calvino is really subbing in there until we hire Mr. Potter's replacement. And then the 10 staff that are in that box, ongoing social workers, are county social workers. They tend to have a caseload of approximately 18 families each, and there can frequently be more than one child in a family. So that unit, on average, has about 180 families actively in it. The caseloads are mixed of kids that have been successfully returned home safely, reunified, to kids that maybe aren't just been removed and are in foster care, and the cases at the very beginning. And I'm going to come back at another meeting and share more of what happens in the ongoing day. I won't go into more details, but I'll just give you a sense of the volume. The next unit is the court services unit. This normally is run by Mr. Calvino with two staff reporting to Donna Rhodes, our gang intervention supervisor. Because of our retirement, Nancy Ramsey and Donna Rhodes are sort of helping. Donna Rhodes is our supervisor of the unit, but she's very busy with her gang intervention activities, so our lead supervisor is also assisting right now until that position's filled. We have eight staff, and those are all county social workers. They tend to work with about 35 youth and their families who are under supervision. They have higher caseloads. Chris Rival is a county employee. And below him is our kinship care coordinator, that's a county employee, and our clerical unit. Below that, Families First, Birth to Three, the waiver program, and Nancy Mooring and the Prevention Services case managers, those are private agencies that we contract with. So sort of that rate arm.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We'll get to agenda item 7, approval of the resolution to replace a DCFS social worker support specialist with a social worker position.
Yes. Well, as I talked about earlier in my discussion about the Access Office and Child Protection Services, the workload in that office has changed, and we have staffed it for many years with a both a social worker and a social worker support specialist, which was a clerical position, to do more high-speed typing and filing and things like that. And that position, over time, also began taking calls, receiving some of the calls. And what we've really found is, as the state of Wisconsin has increased the responsibilities of the CPS Access Office, and it really is included, as I said before, it's receiving documenting reports of alleged child maltreatment. It's analyzing severity of the maltreatment, assessing both present and impending danger, and it's now determining the urgency of the response time. We're really doing a reorganization in this unit. We've made a determination that we want social workers to receive those calls because in many ways the initial assessment is starting with that phone call. The information we're gathering over the phone is going right into our initial assessment. In a sense, it helps inform the social worker going out in the field. We also made a decision that we are going to take our social work staff and actually have them have the staff train both in initial assessment work out in the field and in access reports over the phone. And we are going to have people working in the field and then, you know, for a 3-month stint, manning the phones so that we have more greater flexibility and efficiency in our staff, and that we can then have 9 people who are trained to do initial assessments, that if we have people going out on an extended illness or things like that, we're not thrown in such a loop. We can move people around more easily. To make this change in the functioning of the access office, I'm asking for the committee's support and approval of changing the current social work support specialist is retiring, and she's retiring in early July. And we are not going to add an FTE, but we simply want to, in a sense, reclassify this position into a social work position, and it will then become placed in the Child Protective Services Unit. And it will do both access reports over the phone and also be trained to do initial assessments in the field. This position will impose no additional levy funding costs to the county. And what I really think it will do, it'll give us another person who's highly trained, who's able to go out in the field if need be to keep kids safe, conduct initial assessments, and do that work as well as take the phone work. This is something probably we wouldn't have done 20 years ago, because 20 years ago you didn't have as many people who are as good on a keyboard and on a computer, but they are now.
Supervisor Mosgrove?
I just had a question. And so you said initially that person who's going to retire also had like an office staff person, so doing this intake, correct?
The person who is retiring is the office staff.
Okay,
person.
Does it cost more to replace that person with a social worker? The price will be the same?
It will initially not cost more. They are in a higher pay scale over time. But right now, the person who is retiring is at a higher pay than a social worker one.
So right now it would not cost us more.
No.
And the next year it would cost us more to have someone more trained in that position. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when the cost would shift. The person, you got it.
Just added by Jeff to this resolution.
Well, thank you.
Sorry.
The current person in the position makes $26.07 an hour. The social worker would have to be here for 7 years before they get that rate.
There's no impact to
that. So that actually, that's good for us.
Yeah,
huh?
That's
okay.
Good.
It actually lowers it.
Okay, good. Nice, genie piece of paper.
It's not genie. It's real. No, she read your mind.
I know. That's what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Yeah. I make a motion to approve.
Second.
I had some questions, but okay. Before we...
Well, don't we have discussion after we do that, too? Or?
Yeah, sure. Motion by Supervisor Dagger, second by Supervisor Frager. All in favor?
Discussion.
Ask your questions.
I have one. What's the educational level required to take the position?
All social workers have to be college graduates. They generally have a bachelor's degree in social work or a related field. We do have people who may have like a psychology degree or probably usually psychology or social work. We like people to get state certification, and they can go through the process to get that. And we do have master's level social workers on our staff, but minimum is a bachelor's degree.
Is there a cost for the state certification, or
For the worker? In the if the worker wants to get state certified, they have to they would have to apply for that, pass a test, take the sufficient coursework, and pay a. It's like a licensing fee. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, so I've had that for years.
Can we get that in conjunction with the magic piece of paper that has real stuff on it? Can that be included in what the county board sees when this makes it up there?
Well, there would, right now, under the union contract, the county used to pay for certification. That's no longer the case.
Just something so that we know all of that for when this comes.
Okay.
Because I think that might be helpful for folks.
This other sheet is already part of it.
Oh, it is. Oh, that.
Part of it after that.
I see. Okay, good to know. All right. All right. Any other questions? Is there a motion to close discussion?
Make a motion to close.
I'm still working on this chair.
No, it's seeing no more discussion.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Seeing no more discussion. All in favor? Wait, youth and governance.
Aye.
You're sure voting aye too.
Yes.
I
don't know what I'm supposed to be answering.
Yes.
What am I supposed to be
answering? Voting on the resolution.
Yeah, I approve.
That's why you're next to him. Is he supposed to help you out with that?
No, I'm supposed to be helping.
Yeah.
Oh, you are. Oh, it's you. All right. She's supposed to help
you.
I is if you want to approve it. Nay is if you don't.
Yeah.
Or you can just...
I want to approve it.
Okay, say then say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
It's
right.
Easier. They're on the opposite side, so she can direct them.
You'll get a hang of it.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Any abstentions? Chair votes aye. The motion is adopted.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for your support.
Is there any other business authorized by law? Okay. Seeing none, any committee member comments?
Next meeting is the one that's downtown at the museum?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, that has been changed to a Monday night?
Yes, it has.
I don't know if you have
what
any.
It would be a...
July 23rd.
Thank you. Yeah.
6 o'clock to 7 will be the Human Service Committee agenda. 7 to 9 is your jobs and economy, correct?
Yeah.
You said 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That was the only day that we could get both speakers. So we did.
Is the city going to charge us anything to enter the museum?
The city is not, but the museum is. It's nominal. We've taken care of it. It's not an issue. Very, very, very teeny tiny, itty bitty.
Okay, but I mean, who's taking care of it? It
came from the chairman's promotion fund. It was a $150 fee just for utilizing the space.
Okay.
On that day, is the agenda supposed to include the 7 to 9 meeting, or is that a separate non human service committee function?
I don't know.
Well, let us know, please.
Okay. Any other committee member comments? Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Becker, second by Supervisor Frederick. The committee stand. Oh, wait, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, committee stands adjourned.
I will be here at the next meeting.
Okay.
I'm out of town for the whole month of July. I have a wrestling tournament or a wrestling camp. That's the toughest thing.
Okay. Thank you. We'll see you in August then.
All right.
And what time is that meeting?
6 o'clock.
Okay.
On Monday at the Civil War Museum.
Yes.
No, actually, it's the public museum.
You
public
said Civil War on the county board floor.
Did I?
Yes.
No, the Civil War one was the healthcare executive roundtable. Ours is at the public museum.
Make sure you re-announce that or something, because I could have sworn you said Civil War.
Yeah, if you say I need help putting a resume together, you might take a special.
It's the public museum. It's not signed.
Okay.
Because the executive's roundtable was at the public museum. Because that one was emailed to everybody.
Oh, yeah. She can come down anytime.